Hello. This is actually the most relaxing part of my weekend, where I stand on stage in front of 1,000 people and ad-lib 88 slides that I haven't seen yet because people are still editing them. There are many more people in our infrastructure team than we've got here, obviously, and a lot of them are still kind of working on things and sorting stuff out and all that. So I'm going to talk through a few bits of like how EMF overall is made to start with, and then we'll get into some specific team stuff and so on. So first, actually, I'm going to talk about the kind of meta infrastructure, which is the rather annoyingly large amount of stuff that we have to maintain in order to run the event itself before we even get to the field. Running your own infrastructure is hard, it turns out. Sorry if McFly says differently, but it is hard because I've been doing way too much of it over the last 8 months. We are trying to move off using cloud services and proprietary stuff, but doing that for an organization that is temporarily over 500 people every 2 years is a really kind of problematic thing, but we are getting there. And I'd like to kind of cover some of the things that we've moved over this year, which is quite a lot. So this year we've got our own single sign-on service finally. We've migrated email shared inboxes to using our own FreeScout instance, which works reasonably well. We've migrated promotional email from MailChimp, which sucks, to ListMonk, which sucks slightly less. At least it doesn't bill us £1,000 to send emails. We've migrated our asset tracking, which was in Google Sheets, and we've moved some spreadsheets to our self-hosted Grist instance, which we only deployed 2 months ago or something, and now everybody loves it. We are massive fans of Grist. It's like spreadsheets, but with Python. And exactly. And then we did the GoToSocial, and we did Matrix, and now we have way too many things. So we've got 11 permanent infrastructure VMs, 200 single sign-on users. We've sent and received 16,999 messages and 4,921 email tickets for this event alone, and taken 4,317 website payments. That doesn't include the bar and the shop and everything. And on the website, which is a worryingly large code base now, in the last month, we have had 129 merged pull requests from 34 committers, and we still need more help. Please help us. We can't stop building software. We're a software, if EMF is a software organization which occasionally runs events. So now I'm going to go through some of the challenges. There was one main challenge and then a few other minor ones of actually running this event this year. And that challenge was, of course, the weather. We had over 50 mil of rain during the 10 days of setup, which is approximately 2 months' rain in 10 days. We had 32 mil of rain, which is more than a month's rain, on the first day of setup. Oh, come on. I don't recognize that number, so I'm not going to answer it. I can't refuse it, though. We have one on the first day of setup, we were sitting under an event shelter over there in like ankle-deep mud, and the event shelter roof had lost its waterproofing, so it was raining inside the event shelter, and it was like that for like the entire day. It did not stop raining. It was absolutely awful, and we were really looking at like considering whether it was even possible to run the event. And now looking at today, it almost seems like a bad dream, to be honest. We had one unforecast lightning storm where we actually apparently a lightning strike actually hit within the deer park, although nobody actually saw it where it was. That was just from the mapping. That was while everybody was out setting up, so that was a bit scary. Except me, I was in my nice metal cabin. Countless stuck vans. The actual numbers will probably be in the closing talk. Several stuck HGVs. One HGV drove up the hill, got stuck, I had to call the lovely people at Eastnor Castle to come and send a tractor to get it out. The tractor got stuck. They had to send a JCB to get the tractor out. We stuck a few telehandlers in the mud, but we've got the trick to unstick them now, so that's not too much of a problem. And we also have, I don't know if he's in here, but Andy, who just, there he is, a round of applause for Andy, who just turned up like a week ago with his six-wheeler quad bike ATV with winches thing. I'm not sure what the technical term is for it, and has just been ceaselessly freeing vehicles ever since. So we have had a counter, but the counter is not accurate anymore. I saw a few people pushing a camper van out up there like a few hours ago. That one's not on the list. So now I'm going to talk a bit about power, which I'm also in charge of for some reason, because I wrote the software. That's why. So we've got four generators, two battery storage units, 13.7 kilometers of power cable, and more than 200 distribution boxes here. And I was going to put a slide in for this, but I forgot. But I do want to kind of address the whole, you're still using diesel and destroying the planet, which I agree, it sucks. It absolutely sucks. But the technology is not there yet for us not to use diesel. Merely feeding this number of people without burning diesel or propane is currently not feasible at all. So if you don't like that, I suggest you don't buy tickets, because that is the reality of running events. But on the other hand, the amount of diesel we burn is probably a bit less actually than the amount of diesel that is burned when by everybody driving to site. I need to redo that calculation. I only did it 4 years ago or something, and I need to check it, and hopefully that will be on the website. We did have battery units this year. That's not the next slide. Let's go to the next slide. I've given up putting all my power plans on one slide now because it's just too difficult. That is the GraphViz majesty that is the output of our power planning pipeline. You won't be able to read it. Don't try and read it. So yeah, we did have a few batteries this time. We had a battery last time. It worked adequately. We got these batteries. These work better. They've actually got lithium batteries in rather than lead acids, which is nice. During setup, we had that hooked up to the generator, so the generator would run to recharge the battery and then shut down. So the generator is operating in a more optimal regime, and we get to have some quiet night to sleep, which is quite nice. It was automatically starting the generator when the battery got too low, and Will can check it from his phone because it's a Victron device. We had substitution hell this year, unfortunately, from our supplier. They always love to do a bit of substitution. They go, we've got all of those things, we'll send you. And then they actually send you two different boxes which do the same thing as the one box that you ordered. But they don't tell you that, so you've got to try and reverse engineer what their thinking was in order to work out where you've got to put these boxes, which Matt is quite good at now. But this time they cocked up, and they sent us a load of boxes which didn't have the big red 63 amp C-form out, and they should have done. So I had to call a guy, and he dropped a load over. And that's the joy of running events, is once you're in the field, it's like, well, we've got to fix this. Find a guy. I found a guy. It's fine. We also had a bit of generator issues. The left-hand photo is not what you should be seeing in your fuel water separator. That is some very wet diesel, and some other things as well. We don't really know how, but one of the generators somehow managed to suck up a reasonable quantity of water when we started it, and didn't like that very much, but they got it working eventually, thankfully. Then we had another one, which the one by Volunteer Catering, which went out during the event for slightly mysterious reasons, which may or may not be related to that error in the middle. It's all working. It's fine. Fingers crossed. Here's the kind of the gallery of dubious electrics as usual. Don't leave your kettle there at least. I don't know what's going on. I don't really know what's going on there. This comfort monitor is broken, so I can't see it. And then yeah, we had you don't want that either. That wasn't our fault. That was supplied. The one on the left was supplied like that, and the one on the right, I don't know where that was, but use ferals is my answer to that. Here is our standard tent peg earth electrode test. As you can see, it was a lot wetter this year than it was in 2022, and I have quantitative evidence of this now. Thanks. The actual earth electrodes are much lower impedance than these, but that tent peg is almost, it's not quite, but if it was just a little bit wetter, it would meet the criteria to be used as a generator earth rod. It's so wet. Here's our power graphing, which you can see on stats.imf.camp. There's some weirdness that went on today that I don't really understand, and we only got three generators working, and then the other one briefly made an appearance today and seemed to have mucked up some of the other generators' numbers. But, about 180 kilowatts peak demand, I suspect. But the problem is most of our fuel burn comes from when the generators are quite idle. And they kind of, the ones that we have here kind of have a minimum of 10 litres an hour, whether you're using 0 kilowatts or 20 kilowatts. So that's what we're trying to avoid with the batteries. But unfortunately, those batteries are not big enough to use during the event. You can't yet get a good enough battery to use to run the entire load of one of our power grids through it, I hope. Maybe in 2 years' time, there might be something. I don't know. And now I'm going to pass you over to Basil for the network. Hi.
Cool. Bear with me. I've just last-minute preparation. I'm Basil. I've been leading the network team this year. This has been largely the same as previous years, with a few kind of slight differences. We had 14,000 wireless clients, which was 14,000 unique wireless clients, about 4,200 at one time. We had kind of €100,000 of equipment shipped in from the Netherlands, which was interesting. We had had the usual kind of jumping through hoops with ATA carnets and kind of customs, and 2,250 access ports on kind of 88 switches. The network takes a lot of time. We had effectively 90 days of volunteer time to build the network this time. I got 25 people, so that was a lot of work. There's 4.5 kilometers of multi-core fiber running around the field, kind of hooking up dart enclosures and kind of making sure it works. Around 2.5 kilometers of kind of Cat5 UTP for like kind of running to access points and kind of into tents. This time we had a slash 17, which is 32,000 IPv4 addresses on a temporary allocation from VIPE. That if we were to buy that, that'd be about €1.1 million. So we're very grateful for VIPE for having the temporary address allocations to kind of make this possible. Our V6 allocation cost us nothing because V6 is free. This time we had a new uplink. Last time we had a 1 gigabit circuit to the field. That wasn't really enough, so we hit a bit of congestion last time, which that's not okay. So this time we had 40 gigabit, which is a fair increase. That was delivered over 62 kilometers of dark fiber that we bought from the field here to Gloucester, and then sponsored backhaul to London from B-Fiber and kind of Full Fiber, a local ISP. So that was greatly appreciated. To test the uplink, we have a little Dell mini PC with a very good interconnection at kind of 4x10 gig. We had a few issues on day one. on day one, we accidentally deleted one of the VLANs used for phones. thankfully, the automation wasn't rolling out to every switch, so the phones kept working in HQ, where it matters most. But yeah, not ideal. This time, we used more bandwidth. We always say, please use more bandwidth, and we have a lot of capacity to use now. Last time, we had a gigabit circuit, which would have been problematic this time. A peak of approximately 5.5 gig outbound and 2 gigabit inbound. We had a brief scare with DHCP. Addressing lots of wireless clients is a bit of a challenge. We didn't have monitoring until quite late in the event. And this meant that by the time we set up monitoring, we realized that there was only 8% of the addresses left. So we had to make some last minute changes to fit that in. This happened around when the badges were being issued, so we just shifted them off to somewhere else. Otherwise, the Dart enclosures are small portable toilets that are locked off, and we fill them with network switches and attach wireless access points to the roof. So we have a little construction line to make sure to put everything together, and an ohm light on top that signifies that the Dart enclosure is working. This time we had largely the same as last time, a cool room up in the crew area with a core switch running to every decay, with a link to every decay, and then a pile of servers above that, and air conditioning. It was quite warm, and then as the weather heated up, it became a cooler place in the crew area. With the rain that Russ mentioned, we also had our fair share of this. I don't know if that's... just after the lightning, we found that the NOC had flooded, which wasn't ideal. As always, we maintain a full set of tools for running the network. We had a bit of an accident where one of the multi-core fibers was damaged. The end had been broken off. So we in the field, we spliced a new end on and kept it ready, working. We didn't have to replace anything. It was just going to splice a new end on and back into service. The monitoring was a bit delayed, so we had monitoring on paper. As we deployed DKs, we'd mark them off in green and and have a nice visualization of what was to do and what had been done. This is the final DK that was deployed in the field quite late. The equipment on top is for the POTS network, and then we have a switch below that, and then a power distribution on the floor. Of course, we needed to stay organized, so we had a physical Kanban board with post-it notes to make sure everything was kept track of. And we also got our fair share of mail. So we had postcards from Sneakernet, including some pings, which of course were replied to. and one HTTP request, which didn't have a sender. So here's your response. lots of lovely posts. Thank you. That's good. We also had some food. We had some lovely... I'm told this is French bird. I don't know how to pronounce it. If someone can help, that'd be good. France food. Okay, that's... Yeah. And this wouldn't have been possible without the lovely sponsors we have. B-Fiber provided the backhaul to London. This was critical. And we had lots of transit options in London to reach the rest of the internet. And it's perfect. It was, wouldn't have been possible without these. Cool. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, my name's Sam. I run the phones team. So I'm going to talk about some of the stats we have for that when I figure out how this works. Yes, cool. 2024, we decided to build a new system. Previously, we've used the event phone system. Event phone system's great, but we've been reliant on event phone to help us out and come over, and various political things, as I won't mention, make some of that harder, shipping equipment. So we wanted to bring that more in-house. This is my terrible architecture diagram of what the system looked like. And there was a few things. So we're going to redesign it. We wanted to support DECT, but we really wanted to make it a programmable system that was flexible and expandable and that you could plug in any transport network you wanted. So we had DECT, we had POTS, we had SIP clients, we had our SNOM desk phones, we had GSM, But also it was kind of built with the idea of what's the weirdest thing somebody's going to turn up with as a communication system that they want to connect, and we should enable that. And I think you could probably plug a carrier pigeon into this if the carrier pigeon can hand off SIP. But yeah, the whole idea was to make something programmable and also to make something with applications. So, and I'll come with that, people can build applications on the system. We want you to build on top of the phone system and control stuff. And it's a platform very much. So that was the kind of the architecture we had. You can see in yellow the technologies we used. So the DECT stuff was still Mitel. The core, we used this engine called Jambones, which is a programmable communications platform. And then everything on top of that, every time you made a call, we were actually invoking an application, which was actually running in Node-RED, which, for those of you familiar with, is a event-driven application. So a single call makes a webhook call, and we decide what to do with it, route it, where is it allowed, that kind of thing. And then the user applications. So the user applications you built were exactly the same as the applications you were using when you made a call. This is an interesting graph, the total number of phones across all the different access networks we had on site. So you can see basically where we powered the system up Monday evening, I think it was, and kind of it first came up with the users in it. And then we had a steady climb. So this was the initial bit through build. The big spike in the middle was the GSM. So when we actually, the only one there is with the SIM cards, we pre-provisioned them all. So that was when we loaded 250-ish SIM cards into the system. So there's a sudden buck. And then basically, as we opened, that was Thursday, you started climbing. It's quite interesting. You can actually tell what time people go to bed, because the little dips are when people go to bed and turn their DECT phones off for the night, or when the batteries die and they're still in null sector, but who knows. So we climbed, and I think we hit about 1,200 users, something like that. Can't quite see the graph on there, but yeah, so we, in total, I think we hit about 1,200 different types of phones registered on the system this year. So the DECT system, very much the same as previous years, very much based on the event phone. So it's still the Mitel SIP DECT enterprise, let's call it, technology. We deployed 35 RFPs, of which there's one in here somewhere, right by the back door there, if you haven't seen one. It's a square box with four green LEDs on it. We had 35 of those on the site, 645 handsets, which is, I think, about 50% more than 2022. We had around 440 in 2022, and 99% site coverage. Certainly, as far as I know, we didn't have any major black spots. The very last one we rolled out was we actually have coverage in the car park now, so if you're at the bus stop or you're trying to get out of your car on Monday morning, you can use your DECT phone to call Andy. And arrange a release fee. But yeah, so we even have some DECT coverage with an RFP hung up in a tree, which was an interesting project. And the little map over the right there, that's all the DECT RFPs and the links between them. So they all synchronize for time sync between each other. So you can see pretty much one in every DK and one in most of the key tents, venues, that kind of thing. The QTEL, the POTS system, so the POTS is plain old telephone system, or copper dial-up, as you know it. They had, so where's Mawald? Is he in here? He's probably in a tent somewhere. But him and his team built this. They had 106 unique devices this year, so that's doubled on 2022. They ran this capture the phone thing where all the weird phones you saw around the roads, around the edge of the site that you could just walk up and dial on, that was all on their stuff. So one person apparently managed to dial in and record their presence at 70 plus phones. So somebody just spent all weekend walking around phoning on the phones. And 200 plus calls to fax services. So apparently people love fax. Who'd know? The apps. So I said before, and this was one of the things I'm really pleased we did this year, was building an application platform that you guys can build on. So we had 87 applications created, which I think is a really cool number. A few of the ones we're picking out, the kitchen menu, which I wrote, but I thought that's the diagram below. This was built in Node-RED. That is the entire, if you were volunteering and you wanted to know what was for dinner in the menu, if you dial 6368 menu, it'll read you the menu. That's actually reading out of Grist, as Russ mentioned earlier. So the kitchen can update the menu in Grist, and it reads from the spreadsheet in real time and will read it to you. RoboHelp, there's a LLM app that Rob built, which you can ask it questions and it pulls from the API, and the ScotRail apology that just generates a random ScotRail apology file. I quite like that. But there was loads of really awesome. Somebody had something that you could dial a number and tell it what colour, and their tent would change colour. I guess that's so you can find your tent in the dark or something when you get home. I'll just phone my tent and switch the lights on. number of call attempts. I think across the system in total, we had 3,476 calls, which I know there's a few more, especially in the QTEL system, that wouldn't have come through us. So all the data calls and the fax calls didn't come up to the SIP call mostly, just because of like audio and SIP and fax doesn't really match. Things that went wrong, we had one, I'm going to call it a significant bug, thing that stressed me out. And I think you mentioned people on Thursday were having problems with their handset not working and not becoming registered, and I was desperately trying to repairing the user on the handset. Fortunately, by Friday morning, with Marcus's help at about 7 o'clock in the morning, we sat down and debugged it and automated the fix. So we didn't fix the bug, but we automated the fix. So instead of it me writing down all the numbers every couple of hours and having to rekey in about 20, 30 and growing handsets, every 5 minutes we were looking for unpaired handsets and repairing them. And that seems to have done the job, so you know, YOLO it. We had one out, it was all going really well until about lunchtime today, when I went, oh, let's make a call, and something didn't work, and I made a call from another phone, and that didn't work, and another phone, and then I started thinking something's wrong. So we had basically one system outage for about 15 minutes, where we lost all the ability to make calls. It came back, went down, I think, at 12:44 was the last successful call, and 13:01 we figured out which pod it was. So the whole system is running in a Kubernetes cluster. So thank you to Marcus as well for his help with that. But yeah, we restarted the pod, it came back up. Don't know why the pod died, but that's the beauty of Kubernetes, you can just kill it and move on. And GSM, Ita.
Hello again. So you may have noticed this year we ran a somewhat successful GSM network. I don't know if any of you bought, well, I know certainly a lot of you bought our lovely SIMs and put them into your phone, and if you did, you would have seen our gsm.emf.camp network name. This was we have had cellular service in previous years, but this was like an entirely new team this year, so like different people doing it, totally new setups. We didn't really reuse things from before. The technology stacks we were using were not really significantly different. We're using this open source Osmocom stack, which people have used before, I think in 2018 or something. So that wasn't totally new. But yeah, like I sort of decided in the pub that it would be nice to have some sort of phone network. And like I was unfortunately sitting within earshot of Russ. And so now I ended up having to do that. So we looked into it. We had some very gracious, I did like an initial call, and a bunch of very helpful and knowledgeable volunteers came and were like, here you go, you should probably use this software. We have some hardware that you can use. So this is ran entirely on volunteers donating some GSM base station hardware. And of course, to run a GSM network in the UK, you need approval from Ofcom, who licensed the spectrum. So this is using a shared access license from them that cost about, I think, £30 per Dart and Clone when he had four of them. So it wasn't so bad in the DCS 1800 band. So how did we do? Well, I ran the command on the mobile station controller that tells us how many people we have registered when I was writing these slides, and we had 93 people, so that's pretty cool. And this was despite only having 2 out of 5 functioning base stations, so we did actually plan for a lot more. If you're around site, you might have seen these rather snazzy-looking antennas on some of the Dart enclosures, specifically, I think, V2, G1, C1, and something else. So these that we had one for transmission, one for receive. And this was very much, it looks very professional installed there if you don't mind the zip ties. But this was actually something I ordered on Amazon like the week before. I had left it kind of late to get it from any of the real reputable suppliers, and the bank holiday Monday wasn't very helpful. So I ended up with this very amazing antenna that advertised waterproof AI with array on roof boost. So your GSM service has been a courtesy of this. That was the receive antenna because it looked bulky and kind of useful. We also had a transmit antenna, and this one is from a company called Bingfu, and it can survive all 4 elements. Unfortunately, we haven't been able to test snow this year, but you know, maybe next time. If you want an idea of what the hardware we were using looks like, this is one of the base stations we were using. This is a IP.access Nano BTS. I think this model is 139. It looks like a bit like a weird American football or something, and that has the 2 antennas going into it, and it just takes power over Ethernet. We had lots of these. We had some of a different model. Here's a pile of very sad base stations in the POC tent after I spent way too much time on Friday trying to get them to behave. The hockey puck one comes up and then like complains about channels. There's the one Sam donated that worked fine. We actually had that one deployed on Dart Enclose C1, but it was doing weird things with calls. Like, I was testing it, and I'd never had this before, but like you could get someone trapped in a call and they couldn't hang up. Like, you would press the hang up button, and the base station, because I think it was out of sync or something, would just be like, no, I'm not going to do that. So we had to take that one out of service because that was being quite annoying. And there's another one that like we would bring up and then it would like print a whole bunch of C stack traces. And I was like, that's not right. Okay. So despite having planned for much more, we couldn't get the network we wanted, but I still think it was relatively successful. It turns out even just with one base station, you can kind of cover the entire field on 23 dBm, so 250 milliwatts of power. So that exceeded my expectations, certainly. And I just want to call out, I mean, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, I was literally just some woman in the pub with a bad idea. So, you know, many thanks to all these lovely people who showed up and told me, gave me somewhat of a clue. In particular, our SIM cards are entirely courtesy of C3GSM, who've run networks at the CCC events before, who gave us a batch of 250. And also, in particular, Linksys, one of their volunteers who's helped out. The Osmocom and Sysmocom people who made the software that we use. Marald, Callum, Samach, and others who gave us the hardware that we used. Bonzi, Eval, and others who did a lot of the hard work in actually debugging it. And probably many others that I've forgotten. But yeah, so that's GSM. Oh, and also, I wasn't there for this, but apparently the phones operation center transformed into a pizza operation center on Sunday night, and it looked very, very tasty. So yeah, over to Sam for video.
Thanks. Hello. I'm Sam from the video team. So we got to the field and we bought some stuff. There's not a projector there. I should know that. And it turns out we didn't really have a tent with any power or internet. So we leased some space in some of the other team's tents. So on the left there, you can see our temporary desk in HQ. It's comprised of two flight cases and one Elemental Media Encoder, one rack unit server. I hope the Elemental devs aren't watching. If you are, I am sorry. And then we upgraded to a unheated, barely lit network operation center. And they were kind enough to signpost our table so you can see, I'm not sure if you can read it, that reads VOC Express. So it's the Express VOC service desk. We're broadcast gear as infrastructure. I call this the mullet. It's a business in the front, party in the back. Looks all very nice up there, and in the back is a total mess. We did some cable management, and then we wrecked it all because we had to reconfigure stuff. So top to bottom there, you've got an unreasonably fancy MDU, so power distribution box at the top. That will actually draw you the waveform in real time of the mains you're feeding it. And if I'd configured it via serial, I would have had the total power consumption of all our video gear, but I ran out of time, sorry. Underneath that is a SSD video recorder that records not uncompressed, but very lightly compressed video directly onto an SSD. Underneath that is a Asia video router, so this routes the uncompressed video signals from 16 sources to 16 destinations. It was very, very handy. It's remote controllable. It's great. I like it, even though you make those routes via unauthenticated HTTP GET requests. Thank God for VLANs, is all I can say. There's a bit of space there, because this is another one. Don't worry about it. There's a 5U emergency router in one of the other stages. It's sort of a Cthulhu mess coming out the top. It's fine. That's one of our encoder boxes. And underneath that is a Vision Mix that I bought off eBay. And underneath that is a bit of video glue. Don't worry about it. It didn't work anyway. So yeah, three different models of Vision Mixes in the stages. Sorry, Vontiers. The crestfallen look when I gave some training on how to use a panel and said, and then this is completely different in all of the other two stages, sorry. You'll work it out, it'll be fine. So we had Blackmagic ATEM Constellations, one of me and two of me. We had that aforementioned Panasonic HS450 that I bought off eBay while in the pub. It's very risky. We had two different models of video router, as mentioned, and a big pile of glue and converters and random other crap. We bought multiple encoding options because we weren't quite sure what we're going to do. So this is turning the uncompressed video into nice compressed, hopefully crisp H.264 to send over the internet. None of them worked when we tried to get them going. Yeah. So night spent in the field, 12 so far, and of which the video team slept 11. I don't really want to talk about it. Buy me a beer. But eventually, it mostly works, I think. Yeah. And then something amazing happened. And according to the volunteering system and the lack of panicked calls to VOC, 100% of vision mixer and camera operator shifts were filled. Like, that's incredible. So thank you so, so much to anyone who did, anyone who volunteered at all, but particularly to video team volunteers. Stream screenshots are infrastructure. Here's some wild video team operatives in the field when the vision mixer forgot to cut away. We've got some raw footage, 3.5 terabytes and growing. I need to work out how to get that off-site safely. Fortunately, we have quite a nice internet connection for at least one more day, I hope. Yeah. If you were up very early this morning, you may have noticed that streaming.media.ccc.de thought EMF had ended a day early. So thank you to Gunzi for rushing out a very quick fix to that. More stream screenshots. This was a personal favourite. I'm afraid I missed the name of the presenter in the talk, but it made me laugh. Similarly, I don't know what's going on there. Video, maybe? Yeah, there we go. It was great. Thanks for keeping us entertained. We also had some other new stuff this year. So we, returning stuff, should we say. So we ran InfoBeamer, which is what's been powering the lovely schedule and content in between the different talks we've had. So we had a content submission system, which some of you have used. Thank you very much for that. So it allowed you to submit your own slides, videos, static images. They have to be 1920 by 1080 pixels, please. And it would show them randomly on the screens in between talks. And that was great. Thank you so much for your submissions. 41, I feel like we can probably get a bit more of that before we have to turn it off. Here's some favorites. This is Lex's wonderful CFAX compiler fax, or an advert for it, UFAX. Valid, I believe, and CC that's OCRable, and it compiles and runs it for you, which is wonderful. And a huge shout out as well to Harriet S, age 6, who has, I think, perfectly captured. You know, you've got the cherry picker, you've got the dome, like, you know. But most importantly, at least for me, people are infrastructure. Thank you so, so much to all the people who have helped. You know who you are, who kept me sane, kept everything running, who volunteered, who bought me drinks and snacks and stuff in VOC, who came down and stayed up all night configuring stuff. Many thanks.
So, hello, I'm Blue, and I've been dealing with the buses with Q. Seems simple. No. It's one where I was took on the task from kind of day job to deal with buses. I emailed 15 coach companies. 5 replied, 2 had availability, and 1 was stupid money. So, you know. We also had 61016 set up, so if you need to find out about buses, give them a call, don't text. And we did them with Iridium trackers, which look like this. Not ones with government data on, but hey, those of you that saw my talk. So they went on the map like this, which was good. And a rough estimate, we had 114 bus journeys-ish, one wartime bomb near the track at Sheffield, one derailed freight train in Cumbria, which completely messed everything up on the first day, and one planned engineering work that we found out about slightly too late and had to call the coach company going, by the way, can you run to Worcestershire Parkway instead of Ledbury, because we don't want to subject our volunteers, our attendees to 2 buses. And we've driven about over 1,000 miles, and the thing about the buses being tracked is we know where they are. So one morning I messaged Q going, do you know where the second tracker has gone? Look on the map. It's at the bus depot. So, yeah, a few miles away. Hopefully you've enjoyed having it and it's made it a bit easier. But thank you.
Just a few other bits. Actually, if you've got the stage stats, it turns out once you've launched a Google Slides presentation, you can't edit it. Somebody else can't edit it after you've started presenting, which is disappointing, I think. So.
Hello, I am not the kitchen. Hi folks, I'm John from the stage team. The irony of not being able to get my own slide running on one of our stages is not lost on me. we are a four-person team, essentially started planning pretty much all of our design and prep around November, all the way up until a couple of weeks before the event. In total, we've had 80 and a half hours of build crew with 23 stage crew over 8 days. Four duty techs, you'll have seen me or Sam or Ruth or a couple of other folks running around, for covering 58 hours of on-call support for all of our stages. 410 lights, four smoke machines, one what was described to me by someone as a considerably large fogger, 103.5 meters of truss, not Liz, 11 amps, 11 amps, not the guitar kind, capable of punching up to 88,000 watts into our 60 speakers and 25 microphones. I'm reliably informed so far, the only really significant sound issue that we've had is the fact that Null Sector is apparently too good, and we keep having to turn it down. 7,046 meters of power and lighting cable, 2,000 meters of audio, over 100 venue managers, sound techs, and lighting techs we've had volunteer. Can I just get a massive round of applause for those folks? Because they have all been summarily excellent, regardless of whether they have ever been playing with these consoles for years or never touched one before. They have all stepped up to the plate. They are a massive, massive part of getting all of this to run as smoothly as it has. Three different models of lighting desks. We've got some magic cues for our Charvet fans in, and the entire rest of it is Ava lights. About 15 tons of kit that we have dropped in for the weekend and will be dropping back out over this evening and tomorrow. So if you happen to be around and fancy helping sling some lights, please do get in touch. The main thing that we brought in terms of software infrastructure, because you've always got to have some software infrastructure, was the captioning system, which we started off initially building out from scratch on account of having... in previous years, we had live caption folks. Unfortunately, we weren't able to pull the budget together for that this year. So we were like, how can we still do this without having to put all the pieces together? And what we came up with was a very fun solution, which essentially involved piping all of the audio from the sound desks directly into a Mac Mini running OpenAI Whisper, and then piping that back out into InfoBeamer, which sounded amazing and also promptly proceeded to break as soon as we set it up on Thursday, which resulted in us Ben and Adam rebuilding our entire capture system between Thursday evening and Friday morning in order to get it online. So we have, for those of you who have been using it, hopefully pretty darn good captions built in about 9.5 hours. And that's us. Thank you so much.
Yep, so I'm just going to share a few stats from the kitchen, the volunteer kitchen. We did have Prometheus metrics on the kitchen, of course, as all good kitchens do. Unfortunately, we didn't get them into Grafana at this point, and some of the data got lost. But there is a graph of when people go into meals. I can also confirm the final tally from the coffee machine, which records all of its output, and it produced 81 litres of hot water and 301 litres of coffee, which I think is quite a lot of coffee. So I think that is basically it from us, and almost on time. Jonty's probably not even here yet. So I do want to say a massive thanks to all of our infrastructure, crew, and everybody who's helped build this event. It has been despite the rain, it has been so much less stressful than it was last time, and I really hope that trend continues. If you're interested in helping out, we sometimes can't respond to everybody in a positive way because we can't just throw more people at things indefinitely, but if you are interested in helping out, try and find a team lead and have a chat to them, and I'm sure a lot of people would be interested in having you helping. So just a big round of applause, I think, for all of the site team.